This is What's at Risk on WBZ News Radio 1030 and WBZ.com with Mike Christian of Risk Strategies Company.
Hi, I'm Mike Christian, and welcome to a special encore presentation of What's at Risk. We're interested in what you're thinking about. Send us an email at whatsatrisk@risk-strategies.com and let us know what's on your mind. Tonight on What's at Risk, we examine how a huge forest fire in the early 1900s set the stage for the catastrophic fires of today. Timothy Egan, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Big Burn, will give us his insights on this epic historical saga and cautionary tale for our time.
I fell into a burning ring of fire, went down, 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 and the flames went higher, and it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Then, in segment two, we'll talk to Christopher Reich, New York Times best-selling author of The Rules of Deception and The Rules of Vengeance. Chris will give us his insights on spying techniques, the latest technology used by the military and security forces, and the risk of dealing with Russia in today's changing global environment. Fire was unimaginably huge, stretching for miles across mountain peaks and valleys. When it finally ebbed away, its trailing embers drowned by a late summer rain, it had seared more than 3 million acres of densely forested wilderness, taken the lives of 85 people, maimed and injured many more, and burned several towns to the ground. A combination of uniquely dry conditions and inadequate support for the forestry service contributed to the disaster. Beginning high in the mountains, the lightning-caused conflagration spread with the velocity of a tidal wave. Flames borne on hurricane-force winds raced through tender dry foliage, leaping into the sky and plunging through the virgin forest. Centuries-old pine and fir trees exploded as their sap boiled, sending huge balls of raw fire down the mountains ahead of them, incinerating everything in the path of the advancing firestorm. In spite of all that could be done by a hastily assembled army of untrained and poorly equipped firefighters, nothing was left but scorched earth. The Big Burn, Teddy Roosevelt and the Fire That Saved America by Timothy Egan, is gripping and moralistic. As the fire spread for miles through the northern Rockies, a chain of small towns stood in the path. Many were hastily constructed railroad shanty towns, rife with crime and corruption, but some were more substantial settlements established by the last of the Western homesteaders.
And it's not a curse. If you don't light my fire, then don't come around, 'cause I'm gonna burn one down.
In the New York Times bestseller, The Big Burn, Timothy Egan narrates the struggles of the overmatched Rangers against the fire with unstoppable dramatic force. Equally dramatic is the larger story he tells of the outsized President Teddy Roosevelt and his chief forester, Gifford Pinchot. Pioneering the notion of conservation, Roosevelt and Pinchot did nothing less than create the idea of public land as our national treasure, owned by and preserved for every citizen. The robber barons fought Roosevelt and Pinchot's Rangers, but the Big Burn saved the forest even as it destroyed them. The heroism showed by the Rangers turned public opinion permanently in their favor and became the creation myth that drove the U.S. Forest Service. Egan reveals how the lesson learned from the disaster was actually the wrong one. Thereafter, the government suppressed all forest fires, setting the stage for the catastrophic fires of today. Firefighting now accounts for nearly half of the Forest Service budget, costing taxpayers billions. Egan says this is not quite what Roosevelt had in mind. Timothy Egan is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter and the author of 5 books, most recently The Worst Hard Time, which won a National Book Award for nonfiction and was named a New York Times Editor's Choice, a New York Times Notable Book, a Washington State Book Award winner, and a Book Sense Book of the Year Honor Book. He writes a weekly column, Outpost, for the New York Times.
We're speaking with Timothy Egan, the author of The Big Burn, Teddy Roosevelt, and the Fire That Saved America. So in August of 1910, the largest wildfire in American history, at least to that point, roared through parts of Montana, Idaho, and Washington states. What set of circumstances led to such a widespread fire?
Not just to that point, but ever since. There hasn't been a fire like this ever. I mean, since the fire happened 100 years ago. Just to put this into some perspective for your listeners, we had some fires in California a few weeks ago burning east of Los Angeles. Pretty good-sized fires, you know, smoke lingering over the L.A. basin, flames reaching down into homes. But those fires totaled 100,000 acres. This fire was 3 million acres, and it happened in less than a weekend, a day and a half. So I tell people it's basically as if all of Connecticut had burned in a weekend, an area the size of Connecticut, 3 million acres. Now, what caused it? Well, it was a long, dry summer. That wasn't unusual. There were lightning strikes that came down and just caused a whole bunch of smaller fires. That wasn't unusual. But then these hurricane-force winds came out of nowhere, 70 miles an hour or more, and this thing became a storm. It became a firestorm and created its own weather system. That was unusual.
So Teddy Roosevelt created the Forest Service to really protect the national parks that he championed and created. But in those days, not everybody loved the national parks or the Forest Service, for that matter. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, and you know, the national parks were sort of the smaller crown jewel part of the land legacy of Roosevelt. Remember, just to put this in perspective, overall, Roosevelt set aside for future generations and gave his title to all Americans land equal to the size of France, about 500 million acres. Only a small part of that were the national parks, which you saw in the Ken Burns documentary, the sort of crown jewels, the scenery things, what some people dismiss as eco-porn. The Forest Service was the big, rumpled, sometimes messy mane of the public lands. It was, you know, half that. It was at 200 million acres, way more than the parks. And this is land that was supposed to be for the average person. So Roosevelt sets this aside with his forester, Gifford Pinchot, and it's a big fight because it's the very end of these Gilded Age powers, these Rockefellers and Harrimans and Guggenheims and people we know primarily now because of their philanthropies, I guess. They were clinging to this huge base of land they already had. They didn't want this land to go to, quote, future generations. So he was really opposed. And then in his own party, remember Roosevelt was a Republican, Teddy, they were opposed to the creation of national forests. And then out west, where these young rangers had been sent the agency being only 5 years old, the folks in the woods didn't like it either. There were these Deadwood types who had, you know, saloons and whorehouses and all manner of sort of boom and bust towns going. So they were getting it from all sides just before this fire hit.
But when the fire occurred, William Howard Taft actually was the president at
Correct.
That point.
And Roosevelt had just left, given the presidency to Taft, right.
Right, and he was ambivalent at best, probably, about the Forest Service, right?
Right, though he made a promise to Roosevelt on the eve of the transfer of power that he would continue on the conservation dream, which, you know, was only 5 years old, as I said. Taft was, he just didn't like conflict. He was a big guy, 350 pounds. The press made fun of him, mocked him for his size and his waddle and his yachting costumes, as they called him. And he didn't have the nerve for fight. And so when they, you know, when he was president, he started to cave. He started to actually give public land back to some of the robber barons. So then the fire happens. It happens on Taft's watch, 1910. It happens after the Forest Service has lost their chief forester, Gifford Pinchot, and the agency sort of orphaned. They're being picked apart. They're being defunded by a hostile Congress. And because it was so spectacular, and because almost 100 people lost their lives and five towns were erased from the map, and because the press covered this thing, it made heroes of the young Forest Service and swung public sentiment in their behalf.
But the Forest Service really was ill-equipped to deal with this disaster at that point, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the honest rangers said later in their reminiscences of this, it was an utter failure. They're sitting out there in their khaki pants and thin-soled shoes and floppy hats, and a little axe and a shovel was it. And they're up there in the woods trying to scrape a fire line. And so then when this thing, and nobody knew how to fight a fire then, too. I should make that point. This is the first time the United States government had ever tried to assemble an army to fight a fire before. And they were just vastly overmatched and had no idea what they were doing.
August 49, North Montana. The hottest day on record, and the forest tend to dry. Lightning strikes in the mountains. I was crew chief at the jump base. I prepared the boys to fly. Pick the drop zone. C-47 comes in low. Feel the tap upon your leg that tells you go. See the circle of the fire down below. 15 of us dropped above the cold Missouri water. Gauge the fire, I'd seen bigger. We'd have it lit by morning, even if we took it slow. But the fire crown jumped the valley just ahead. There was no way down. Headed for the ridge instead. Too big to fight it. We'd have to fight that slope instead. Flames one step behind above the cold Missouri water.
We're talking to Timothy Egan, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Big Burn.
Now, the robber barons that you alluded to before, who really exploited the forest for their own gain, would have loved to have seen the Forest Service destroyed by this fire, basically. But the fire was also threatening the prime forest land. How did they get through the balance of that?
Yeah, well, interestingly, they later co-opted the Forest Service because of this fire. They thought, oh, great. Well, see, after this, the Forest Service main mission was to put out fires, not to be this conservator of the Roosevelt dream and administer it in a more balanced way. So the Forest Service co-opted it over the years. They said, great, they'll put out all the fires, they'll build all the roads, then we can go in there and take the timber basically for free. So they came around after the fire. Now, before the fire, they were opposed to it because they thought these guys were out there keeping them from having their hands on this wood.
Now, you focus on the town of Wallace, Idaho, but several small towns were swept up by the flames. Was there much warning, and were the people able to get out of the path of the flames?
Well, my template for the evacuation scene, when Wallace evacuates, they had this women and children first, men must stay behind and fight. It was sort of like the scene in the Titanic where the gentlemen were supposed to hold back while the women and children get into the boats. they had utter chaos. They knew something was coming. All August of 1910, this thing had been sort of creeping in on them. They could see the hillsides were aflame. And then when it blew up, they pressed the panic button. They had an evacuation plan, but these trains came into town. It was every person for themselves. They were going to try to get out of town, and they thought, you know, if I don't get on that train, I will surely die. And some of them did die that didn't get on those trains out of town.
Now, at the scene of the fire, there are many heroes, not the least of which was Ranger Ed Pulaski. What did he do during the fire?
Pulaski, by the way, is known to most forest rangers for the tool that has the same name. You ask a ranger what's their favorite tool, and they'll say it's a Pulaski, which is a combination axe and pick. It's a double-edged thing. It has an axe edge on one end and a pick on the other. He invented that, never got any money for it, never got a patent. But he was a hero. He was not one of these Yale-educated rangers like most of these young guys were. He was a man of the people. He was blue-collar. He was middle-aged. He kicked around all over the West. And so when the fire happens, this guy had more practical knowledge and skill than anyone else, and it's spectacular what he did. He saved about 40 lives by forcing them into this mine shaft and ordering them to lie down at gunpoint while the fire passed over them. Now, other people had gone into mine shafts too, but the fire found them. It was this beast in search of oxygen. So it just, as it leapt through the mountains in some of these tunnels, it just sucked out all the air and they suffocated. They died. They were their lungs were compromised. But Pulaski saved all these people. Now, almost 100 years later, there finally is a Pulaski Trail in the Rockies, and it's a National Historic Site, and you can sort of walk the path up to where he rescued all these men.
Now, who else helped fight the fire?
Well, it was interesting to me as a student of history that you had the peak of Italian immigration going on at this time, because remember, the Irish came in the late 19th century, and then from 1900 to 1910 was the peak of Italian immigration. So I traced these Italian immigrants back to a little village north of Turin, where I found a village that had sent their boys off to the West, and some of them died in this fire. Irish immigrants, and then interestingly, there were African American soldiers known as the Buffalo Soldiers. That's what the Indians called them, and they almost doubled the population of blacks in the state of Idaho by showing up in their uniforms and their rifles, and they single-handedly saved at least one town, possibly two.
You know, Tim, speaking of fires, you're not going to believe this, but we're having a fire alarm in my building.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they want us to all leave. Do you mind if I call you back? Speaking with Timothy Egan, the author of The Big Burn, Teddy Roosevelt, and the Fire That Saved America. So what was the public reaction to the fire at the time it was happening? And I suppose news wasn't going as quickly then as it does today, but then immediately right after.
The fire itself was page one news all over the United States, not just in the West. And it was cast as this mythic, not quite mythic, but it was cast as heroic, basically man against nature, the biggest battle yet, and men had been routed, but men had tried heroically to defeat this thing. So it was, you remember that at this time, 100 years ago, most of the wild things have been removed from the West, wolves and grizzly bears, and Native Americans have been pushed to the edges of the land. So fire was really the last thing that really scared people. And so when this thing happened, it was both catastrophic in terms of a big deal storm, a scary storm, and heroic in the sense that the people who dared to put up a fight against this thing were viewed favorably. Now, the immediate political result and what it means for us 100 years later was that it changed public sentiment on behalf of Roosevelt's great dream. So the agency was saved. Congress then doubled their budget after almost defunding the Forest Service. And then the next year, they created National Forests in the East, and everyone said it was a direct result of the sentiment that came after this fire. So forests in Massachusetts, in New England, in all throughout Pennsylvania and the Virginias, historians will tell you they owe their creation in large part to the public sentiment that changed after this fire.
So what other lessons were learned from the disaster?
Well, the wrong lesson was taken out of this fire, which was that thereafter they vowed to put out every fire. And they started something called the 10 o'clock rule, in which a fire appeared on your watch, that is you, a forest supervisor, you had to put it out by 10 o'clock the next day. And, you know, this was good in one respect in that it gave the public trust that these people were out doing something to protect the woods from fire. But fire is part of nature. So for the next 100 years, trying to put out every fire has led to a lot of standing dead timber, dry trees, trees that need to burn in some cases, and bigger, hotter fires. The ones we saw in the last 10 years were because of this.
Yeah, and you hear that a lot, that, you know, what's being burned, you just started in California a few weeks ago, is something that, you know, an area that hadn't burned in 100 years or 200 years and really needed to burn, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a hard thing for the public to understand. I mean, there are trees that won't even reproduce without fire. Their cones won't pop open unless it's hot enough. So, I mean, the problem now is that people love the national forests. That's a problem because they live next to them. So you have 20 million people, at least in the West alone, living within a mile or so of national forests. So most firefighting now is done to protect people whose homes are next to national forests.
Right. It's the same issue we have with hurricanes on the East Coast.
You are absolutely right. Yes.
So is there lessons today that we can apply beyond the fact that you can't put out every fire, although with people living next to the woods, you almost are
yeah, I mean, the one lesson, firefighting comes and goes in terms of tactics. You know, they hit it from the air with retardants. They hit it from the land with bulldozers and shovels. And in some cases, they're effective. In some cases, they don't have a prayer, as they did in this case. But I think the more important thing is that public sentiment about public lands in general, which again was a real experiment. It was really something that came out of left field. No country had tried anything on this scale before, that we now know the value of it, and there's no dispute over the fact of it. So I see this as, in some ways, the creation myth / story of how we got our public lands.
Well, we've been speaking to Timothy Egan, the author of The Big Burn. Tim, is there a website?
Just anywhere where books are sold, from Amazon to your local independent bookstore. It's all over the country right now.
Time for a CBS News update. We'll be right back with more What's at Risk.
When your company is considering risk management and consultative support for your business insurance, make the right choice and call Risk Strategies Company. With offices in Massachusetts, New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Irvine, California, Chicago, and Providence, Risk Strategies Company takes a team approach to protecting your assets efficiently and cost-effectively. By offering a wide range of services and capabilities, Risk Strategies Company brings the highest level of expertise to clients in all areas of insurance and risk management, delivering insurance solutions, extensive carrier relationships and marketing expertise, claim advocacy, loss control safety management, health and welfare coverage, life and executive compensation plans, personal insurance lines, and surety. For the most comprehensive risk management and insurance coverage for your business, depend on Risk Strategies Company. Learn more at risk-strategies.com or call 617-330-5700. 617-330-5700.